very good afternoon to you and a warm welcome to On The Radar News Analysis right here on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM. I am your host, Ndafa Happy Juju, here to keep you company up until 14:30. Now the time is 2 minutes past the hour of 1300 hours. It's Thursday, the 14th of August, 2025. And as the week edges closer to the finishing line, the national conversation is heating up around how we navigate the fast-changing digital world. Now, today, we turn our attention to the Ethical Use of Social Media campaign, a timely initiative aimed to make Namibia's online spaces safer, more respectful, and more truthful. Now, in an era where one post can spark a movement or spread misinformation in seconds, the question is, how do we as citizens ensure our digital footprints build rather than break down our communities? What does ethical use really mean, and why is it so urgent now? We'll be speaking to the media ombudsman to unpack the campaign's relevance, the responsibility that fall on each of us, and how Namibia can foster a culture of integrity, empathy, and accountability online. Now, whether you're a content creator, an occasional Facebook scroller, or someone who runs a business entirely online, this conversation affects you. So stay tuned, stream us live on Eagle FM app or website, and join the discussion on WhatsApp, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. This is On The Radar, where Namibia's power, policy, and people meet unfiltered. Let's dive right into it. The Namibia University of Science and Technology, NAST, yesterday hosted the official launch of the Ethical Use of Social Media campaign at its main campus in partnership with the Ministry of Information, Communication and Technology. Delivering remarks at the event, NAST Vice Chancellor Prof. Erod Naumeb urged Namibians to use social media responsibly, respectfully, and ethically, and to foster a culture of integrity, empathy, and accountability in their digital footprint. Now, Naumeb acknowledged the dual nature of digital platforms such as Facebook, Instagram, X, TikTok, and WhatsApp, noting that while they serve as powerful tools for communication and innovation, they also present challenges, including misinformation, cyberbullying, and the misuse of generative artificial intelligence, also known as AI. Now, he warned against over-reliance on AI-generated content without proper fact-checking, emphasizing the importance of integrating the responsible use of AI into NAST's academic policies rather than burning it outright. The ministry's decision to launch the Ethical Use of Social Media campaign is both timely and commendable, he said, adding that the initiative will help promote critical thinking, respectful communication, and safer online spaces. Naumeb called on students, staff, and the public to become ambassadors for ethical digital behavior and to use their platforms to amplify the campaign's message. Let's move it from a project to a movement, he urged. Now, the campaign aims to create awareness on digital ethics, promote critical thinking, and foster a culture of empathy and accountability online. By addressing harmony behavior, it seeks to protect vulnerable groups, particularly youth, and ensure that social media remains a force for innovation, education, and national unity rather than division. Let's take a listen to the Vice Chancellor, Prof. Naumeb.
Aims to raise awareness among students, staff, and the general public in Namibia about the importance of using social media responsibly, respectfully, and ethically, and to foster a culture of integrity, empathy, and accountability in our digital footprint. Ladies and gentlemen, Namibia's social media landscape has grown rapidly, as you would imagine. Over the past few years, we have platforms such as Facebook. For those who are much younger than me, the only social media platform I used to know was Facebook. At that time, we used to confuse it with Bookface. It's a common joke, right? But we have things now, so many different platforms with so many different tools, Instagram, X, TikTok, and WhatsApp. becoming integral tools for our daily communication. The first thing you do when you wake up is probably to check whether you've received something on WhatsApp. And the last thing you do when you go to bed, you want to check again whether you received something on WhatsApp or Instagram. That's how we have been cultured again. While these platforms offer incredible opportunities for communication, as I have just said, information dissemination and innovation, they also pose challenges such as the spread of misinformation and cyberbullying. These challenges are compounded by the rise of artificial intelligence. Generative artificial intelligence, as we call it, and generative artificial tools, and there are many out there, but perhaps the popular one is ChatGPT. These tools, as you are aware, have taken center stage to generate information for learning and for research purposes. These tools are revolutionizing how we approach content creation, design, and problem solving. But it further raises particular concerns, and this is how we view it as a university. It raises concerns about academic integrity. It raises concerns about critical thinking. It raises concerns about experiential learning. If these tools already come with data behind it, how do you know how that data was generated? If we don't learn how to generate our own data and use these tools as a means to analyze the data, not just to rely on data that someone else has generated, and not being able to fact check what the purpose of that data is, and to validate the data that informs these type of tools. This is the concern that we have in terms of the gap in the digital literacy, not only for the students, but also for the staff and the senior academic leaders of this institution. So it means our digital literacy skills must be above that of generative tools such as ChatGPT, so that we are able to validate and fact check the data or the information generated. But also it will help us to become responsible in the manner that we absorb and utilize this type of information. I am pleased to inform you that as a university, Honorable Minister, we have already taken policy adjustments to infuse the responsible use of AI throughout our academic platforms. Now, I'm being very careful here in the manner, in the way I choose the words. I said that we have found policy changes to infuse, not to block. Now, I was very careful because with this kind of new technologies, there is potential to help generate substantial intelligence and also help learning, but also help to create business ideas. So the purpose is not to put it aside. The purpose is to know how to harness it responsibly. So you will see that I have carefully chosen my words to say infuse the responsible use of AI throughout our academic platforms. Honorable Minister, in this context, the ministry's decision to launch the ethical use of social media campaign is both timely and commendable. It is a necessary step in promoting responsible information sharing, critical thinking, and respectful communication. It will help safeguard our online communities, protect individuals, specifically the youth, from harm, and ensure that social media remains a positive force for our societal development and our nation building. Director of Ceremonies, as I conclude my welcoming remarks, I urge every single one of us here, every single one of us here, to become ambassadors of ethical digital behavior. But also, let us leverage our own social media channels. And I know that there are people here with very high social media following. And this is to you. Let us use our social media channels to amplify the campaign's message and inspire others to join this vital project. Let's move it from a project to a movement. I hope you understand that. Now, by working together, we can harness the benefits of social media while mitigating its harm, ensuring it becomes a driver of education, innovation, and national unity. In doing so, we will help to build an online culture grounded in trust, respect, and shared responsibility, one that truly strengthens our nation. With that, I welcome everyone to this event. Thank you so much.
And there you had it. A take-home message is those with social media, with large social media following, and even those with not so much large social media following, let's move and tell others also on our platforms the campaign's message. Let's move it from a project to a movement, the professor urged. So hence why let's really put it into action. When we talk about social media ethics, every one of us really has our part to play, and hence we should really put in the work to do that and ensure the safety of other people on social media. When you see somebody who has made a comment, written a message that is just not right, the best you can do is refrain yourself from sharing it. Sometimes we also play our part in disseminating wrong information, and nowadays, especially this this common way of just sharing information that is unverified. You know, when you share something that yourself you have not verified whether it's really true, whether it's really correct, whether it's even right, even if there's some sort of truth in it, then you make yourself a carrier of disinformation. You share that which is not right, that which is wrong, and you have your part to play. So in this day, it's to be very wise to perhaps reflect on the things that you do yourself that you can try perhaps to refrain from doing in the future. Now, with that being said, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. Now, studio line is also very much open for you to come through and engage with us. 083-288-401 is the number in studio. I'll see you after the commercial break.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
ShopRite is celebrating 35 years of serving Namibia. For 3.5 decades, we've proudly brought you quality products at unbeatable prices. And it's all thanks to you, our loyal customers. Come and enjoy exciting birthday specials across the store. It's our way of saying thank you, Namibia. Come celebrate 35 years of value at ShopRite. ShopRite, low prices you can trust always.
Welcome back. Now, delivering her keynote address at the launch of the Ethical Use of Social Media campaign, Minister of Information and Communication Technology, Emma Theophilus, called on citizens to confront the challenges of social media with the same determination as they embrace its power and opportunities. She highlighted issues such as misinformation, disinformation, privacy breaches, and mental health impact, concerns that she noted affect thousands in the workplace.
When used ethically, social media becomes a platform for transparency, accountability, and citizen engagement, hence strengthening the foundation of our society. I remember when I joined government in 2020, and I think we're very few ministers and deputy ministers, one, that had social media platforms, but also government agencies that had social media platforms were very few. And immediately we said, we want to be leaders that get closer to the society we are representing and the society we are governing. So we encourage deputy ministers, EDs, ministers to actually have a social media platform. But more than that, for government agencies to have active social media platforms so that there is in some level of interaction. Of course, that comes with good intentions, but sometimes the interactions are not respectful, they're not truthful. It puts our PROs in a rapid race where they have to go around information that might not be true and therefore wasting valuable resources. But we still remain to the task to see that it's better for a leader to have a social media platform where they can interact, where a social media user in the public domain can bring to the attention of Inspector General of something that requires the Namibian Police Force attention, or the Minister of ICT that requires the Minister of ICT's attention. We truly believe in the positive impact that social media can have. But like any other technology and any other use, some of these platforms can create challenges that we must overcome, and hence the launch of this particular campaign this very afternoon. Ladies and gentlemen, with great power.
A very good point that the Minister of ICT is making right there, as she emphasizes the importance of our leaders having social media platforms. And of course, other than just having a social media platform, is having an active social media platform. Now, two ministers that I've noticed to be very active, one is a deputy minister and the other is a minister, the Minister of Education, Innovation, Youth, Sports and Culture, Sanet Steenkamp, is quite very active in her social media. Of course, on her WhatsApp. I'm not so sure about the Facebook. But this encourages engagement. And here and there, I've also texted her, replied to some of those, and she would reply back. You see, a minister that is creating a safe space, a platform where should something be bothering someone who is able to reach out to her, then the person can easily say to her, Minister, this and this and this is off, or this and this needs your attention. And you will know that they will immediately be able to respond to you. Also, the Deputy Minister of Education, Innovation, Youth, Sports and Culture, Dino Balotti, is very active on his Facebook platforms. Just the other day, he posted about how he was at a particular engagement where he was even seen dancing with the young ones. Now that creates a safe haven whereby the young people can be able to reach out to the minister. You know, sometimes the young ones may not be able to talk to their parents about the issues they are facing, but they can easily confide in somebody who has become not anymore a stranger, but someone close to them as they see him via platforms, social media platforms. So that's very important for leaders to engage with their fellow people, with the people that they serve. Also, other than that, is for them to be able to be accessible. You know, there are some ministers and some deputy ministers, some EDs that you can quickly identify and say, you know what, there's this particular news that needs to go out there, but I need a second voice to verify whether this is exactly the way it is. Now, when EDs themselves are not responsive or ministers themselves are not very engaging, then it makes it very difficult for the media and also for other people to actually get the right information and henceforth creating correct dissemination of information. So this is quite very, very, very a strong point that the minister is speaking out there. And should any minister, any deputy minister, any ED be listening to my voice right now, I'm just urging you to make yourself accessible to the public, make yourself accessible to the people, so that at the end of the day, even your directives that you send out are quickly implemented, because the people that need to disseminate the information are getting the right information at the right time. Now let's continue to listen to the minister.
Comes great responsibility. As we embrace the great power and opportunities that social media presents, we must equally confront the challenges that come with its use. Today, I would like to address some key concerns that impact our society. Amongst the many are misinformation and disinformation, privacy and mental health that affects thousands of our workforce, both adults and youth alike. We have lost so many of our productive citizens to the scourge of misinformation and disinformation and the lack of privacy and the advent of mental health challenges. Therefore, as caring citizens, we should speak out against the ills both individually and the society as a whole. It is time to share and take responsibility in ensuring that social media remains a force and a positive force to reckon with. And I think especially with misinformation, disinformation, fake news. Again, I reflect at the time where, you know, when governments are dealing with crises, and the largest crisis we had to deal with was the COVID-19 pandemic. I don't know how many of you can remember, there was a time where they used to say that network towers caused COVID-19. And people went into a panic. And I can remember a particular case where a young lady went through a psychosis episode because she felt that the network towers around her would give her COVID. That is the impact of fake news and misinformation and disinformation. And especially in time of crisis, when panic sets in, when citizens are unable to tell, you know, the right thing from the wrong thing or the truthful thing from the thing that is not true, you create chaos. And when you create chaos, and chaos is allowed to thrive in such conditions because there are people who are peddling the misinformation and fake news, we run the high risk of losing lives. Somebody should not lose their life because there is some fake, post online that says they need to go to some place or they need to go to some websites that would lead them to their device being compromised and so on. So we really need to find a way to ensure that we safeguard our citizens where that is concerned. I cannot tell you enough. The Inspector General spoke about the statistics around the fraudulent activities that are happening online. We have cases when somebody has been scammed online and they lose a valuable asset such as their home or their car. You know, these things of somebody says they deposited amount to purchase a car, it ends up the POP is fake. It's not the real POP from the proof of payment from accredited and proper financial institution, and they lose their asset, or somebody scams them and steals their life savings. People can go into emotional distress. They go into mental distress. People end up in the hospital, and we do not want a case where somebody's life is lost because of that distress. So we must safeguard the use of social media and the way we use it as citizens. Directors of ceremonies, in an era where information travels at the speed of light, the increase of fake news and false narratives poses a serious threat to our social fabric. Misinformation can mislead, cause panic, and influence critical decisions that affect our communities. It is essential that we cultivate a culture of critical thinking, questioning the sources of the information we receive. And this is a very, very big one, because we continuously debate at the ministry, especially with one social media platform in particular, WhatsApp. And there's so many WhatsApp groups, from family to friends to trips that never make it out of the WhatsApp group. You know, all of that, as a state and as a government, we cannot come and police the forwarded, you know, those WhatsApp messages that are forwarded many, many, many times. We cannot police that because regulation has its limitations. Just like I'm sure the Inspector General can talk about how, as a police force, they try to ensure that, you know, the streets are safe. They patrol as much as they can, especially on month-end weekends. You know, they're constantly, you know, trying their best to ensure that the country and society is safe. But incidences will arise where, unfortunately, not even the police can save everybody, especially when crimes happen in a domestic setting. You know, the police cannot come into your houses and police what's happening in your homes, for example. Just like the state cannot come into your family WhatsApp groups and actually police what happens in there. We must take a responsibility as citizens of the country, as citizens of Namibia, that when that auntie of yours just shares that AI video of a hippo eating a baby, you must explain to the auntie, the video is not real. its artificial intelligence and encourage her not to share it further because it's not a true reflection of what really happened. We must take that active responsibility, especially as the netizens, all of us that are here, students born in the digital age, where we can tell sometimes that this is probably fake. Or what is the source? Where is this one coming from? Did somebody sign off on this? Because usually on social media nowadays, people forward messages without indicating, you know, that this is where the source is coming from, because they cannot face the consequences once that message or that image or that video has been tracked down. So we must encourage all the users of social media to take caution when consuming this information. So we must question the source. We must cross-verify the facts and resisting the urge to share content that we have not confirmed is true or is authentic. Before posting or sharing, let us pause and ask ourselves, is this information accurate? Is it from a credible source? Because sometimes the source is not credible. I cannot tell you much about policing, you know? So if the Inspector General and I are put in a space, or the Vice Chancellor of NUST and I are put in a space, and I'm supposed to talk about how to run a university, I cannot be the authority definitively to that as opposed to the VC, or how to run a police force as opposed to the Inspector General. All I can tell you is how I can run MICT and the aspirations we have as a government towards digital transformation. So you must also look at the source. Does this person have the necessary capacity to talk about what they're talking about? That's very important. Otherwise, you will be misled that by people who do not have the necessary capacity, the necessary qualifications, and the necessary standing to actually talk about a particular issue. Our collective vigilance, ladies and gentlemen, can curb the spread of false information and uphold the integrity of our digital spaces. Because we must uphold the integrity of our digital spaces. Like I said earlier, it has so much value to offer. But if we allow it to disintegrate into, you know, something so chaotic, we will not be able to see the value of it anymore because it will become harmful as opposed to useful. Colleagues, now is the time that we must remain vigilant about protecting our privacy and respecting that of others. Let us be mindful of the information we share online and utilize privacy settings offered by the various social media platforms to control who can see our data. And remember, privacy is a right under the Namibian Constitution.
There you had it. Verify the source. Now, with that being said, let's pause right here and make room for a commercial break.
Do you want to stand a chance of winning a 500 Namibian dollar gift voucher courtesy of ShopRite USave? Then simply tell us, what is the ShopRite Namibia website? Send your answers in a WhatsApp message to 081-200-4144. That's 081-200-4144. Tune in this Friday from 1:45 to hear if you are this week's lucky winner. You save, I save, we all save at USave.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have the capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. A as the ethical use of social media campaign gains momentum, the spotlight turned to the role of every Namibian in ensuring safer, more responsible online spaces. We'll now speak to the media ombudsman, that is Mr. Sadwak Panduleni Shihomeka. Good afternoon, sir, and welcome to On the Radar Analysis.
Good afternoon, and good afternoon to everyone.
Now, the Namibia University of Science and Technology, also known as NAST, launched the Ethical Use of Social Media campaign alongside MICT yesterday. Now, in your view, say, why is the launch of such a campaign crucial at this time?
Thank you. Thank you so much. I just would like to inform you that the issue of social media ethics literacy, it came a long way. And it is something that, you know, the society has been in need of, you know, for so long.
Mm-hmm.
On various platforms, you know, as an individual and an expert in the field or researcher in the field, I have been also, you know, proposing that we need to have, you know, a combined social media ethics literacy campaign.
Mm-hmm.
So it came at the right time when people are busy using social media for various, you know, they have various messages or various intentions. Some are really, you know, defaming others. Some are violating other people's, you know, human rights. Some, they are not even protecting, you know, the privacy and the dignity and reputation of, you know, the fellow citizens. We have lost a lot. It came at the time when we can see that, you know, there is, you know, moral decay online.
Yeah.
A lot of people, you know, are doing things, you know, immorally. They have no self-respect. They are losing out, you know, our traditions and norms. And therefore, I think the ministry have done, you know, a great job together with the Namibian Institute of Science and Technology to take it up and to take a lead in the public education. Because you cannot control these behaviors and you cannot minimize, you know, social media behaviors and actions alone. You need to do it collectively. And when you do it collectively, both public and private education institutions, individuals, we should come on board and try to educate, create awareness first, then we educate, and from there we hold people accountable for their actions online.
Absolutely. Now, just how can media institutions help combat misinformation and disinformation without infringing on the freedom of expression?
Remember that, you know, the Namibian Constitution made it clear that, you know, first of all of us, we have those freedoms of association, freedom of the press, and also as human beings, we should be able to exercise whatever, you know, freedom without being, you know, coerced or being reprimanded if we are doing it so correctly.
Yeah.
Media houses have got that responsibility to inform the society. Media has got the capacity to unite people because you cannot, you know, inform and educate the society without media houses.
Mm.
So media houses, what they need to do, the media need to do self-regulation first before actually they share a specific, you know, news. They need, you know, to make sure that they have in-house mechanism that will, you know, ensure that, you know, they do fact-checking first. They verify what they have at their, you know, disposal.
Mm-hmm.
They also, you know, report things, you know, accurately. They report it, you know, with honesty. They should not, you know, manipulate content to suit any person of any type or of any, you know, background. They should report it as it is, and where they can see that, you know, as part of the code of ethics, it is not allowed for them to, you know, share this specific thing online without consent of the people, then they should not do it. So what I'm saying is that the media institutions, they should uphold ethical journalism principles,
yeah.
And that, you know, they should report things accurately. They should report it independently. You know, they should report it without, you know, any favor of biasness.
Mm-hmm.
So it should be reported as it is. So without, you know, infringing on people's rights, they should just, you know, report it as it is, and they should not add any or sugarcoat things, you know, when it is not needed.
Absolutely. Now, say, there has been a pick-up of people, of course, suing people for misinformation dissemination or wrong information dissemination or cyberbullying and all that kind of stuff. How do we then strike a balance by those speaking outrightly on those that are doing, that perhaps have done certain things, and they also get sued? How do we strike a balance between what's right and what's wrong? And of course, I know that you're not the Inspector General, but just your viewpoint on that.
Yes, remember that I said even before I took over the Office of Media Ombudsman,
yeah.
I've been vocal in this, I've been researching on this, that, you know, we need to tell what as individuals, it starts with us. It is not starting with you as an individual to find out. This specific news, this specific message, the post that I am crafting and drafting now, does it have any benefit at an individual level? Does it have any benefit for the public at large?
Yeah.
Can it maybe violate somebody's right? Am I not going to damage the reputation of that specific individual, that specific organization? If you are asking yourself this specific question, is it morally acceptable for you to share it? Is it allowed, you know, to be shared, you know, publicly? If it's in the public interest, because there are certain cases that, you know, because due to their, you know, nature, the public needs to be informed. And therefore, the right to privacy, it may be overridden by the public interest.
Yeah.
But there are special cases. What you need to do is do not just think of anything, take pictures, share them without getting the consent from that specific individual or from that specific organization. Do not do it because you have that hatred with the individual or the organization or the office.
Mm.
Do not, you know, do it because you want to surprise people. Don't do it for the sake of doing it, because some people, they carry out, you know, disinformation or misinformation, you know, because they do not know that what they are doing, it might cause harm, it may, you know, cause, you know, pain on a specific individual.
Yeah.
But there are those ones who are doing it purposely because they want to harm a certain individual, because maybe they do have a disagreement, they were working together on a certain project and things did not go well, therefore they need to expose these people, you know, online.
Mm-hmm.
They don't now think that doing that is not only causing harm to that specific individual, privacy and dignity and reputation, but also there will be a lot of questions that people will ask about you as an individual who caused and disseminated this unwanted, you know, specific news or report. So therefore, we should do reflection.
Mm-hmm.
We should ask ourselves questions so that this thing is culturally and societally accepted, so that at least you can now share it publicly.
Absolutely.
So therefore, if we do put it on the weighting scale to see whether it is needed, is it verifiable? Did you verify it? Is it a fact or is it an opinion?
Mm.
If it is an opinion, report it and share it as an opinion. So do not report an opinion as a fact, because then you are likely also even to affect the self-esteem of that specific individual.
Yeah.
So we need to do that. And also legally, is it really, you know, allowed by, you know, our, you know, by laws that we have in the country? We have the Act of Parliament, like the Communication Act,
mm-hmm.
the Electronic Transaction Act. We have various bills like the Data Protection Bill, which is now currently, you know, under Parliament. So are these things, you know, legally allowed? And can you be held accountable for whatever that you are doing? Accountability is the most important thing. And I think we need to enforce that to make people accountable. And once we make them accountable, I hope some of these things, you know, will be minimized.
Mm. Rightly said. Now, of course, I've come to realize that a lot of Namibians are very negative and critical. Something so good can be put up on social media and all the comments will be just very negative. And I think that's something that really needs to be regulated. Now, what role would you say should the Media Ombudsman Office play in monitoring and addressing unethical media practices in the digital space?
Yes. Look at this thing. My office, you know, is serving as a public protector. It is also, you know, serving as a link, an intermediary office between the public and the media. Okay, so that's one thing that we are doing. The role that we have, first, we cannot achieve this thing without, you know, doing or carry out what we call public awareness. People need to be aware. When can we say you are misinforming the society? When can we say you are disinforming the society?
Mm-hmm.
What are the possible consequences at an individual level? And what are the possible consequences at national level? Who will suffer the consequence of your, you know, intentional conduct online?
Yeah.
So, you know, these are things that we need to do first. You know, we create awareness, and we need to, you know, again create awareness that there are specific law enforcement agencies that, you know, are tasked with the responsibility of making sure that people that are transgressing and they are going against these specific, you know, laws, then they can always, you know, come to you if, you know, it is reported or it is regarded as an offensive, you know, event. And if after the awareness, we need to carry out education.
Mm-hmm.
And education, that's where my office needs to come in. I will have several, you know, seminars. I will be appearing on various media platforms. I can go to various, you know, community meetings that are offline to meet individuals of different categories. The whole issue is my office would like people to take, you know, to be responsible and accountable to what they are doing. And for me to hold them accountable, whether it is now the media or it is the public, for me to hold them accountable, first I need to create awareness. Then, secondly, I need to educate. And educating an adult is not an easy task. Because adults, the way they are now acting online, some, they are always taking things for granted, joking all the time. Anything that is coming there, they will throw in a joke, they will take it as if, you know, nobody will care about what they are saying. Without considering, you know, the extent to which that specific action or post will, you know, damage a person's individual reputation, organizational, you know, reputation, and also even will touch on traditions and cultures. I've seen a lot of them that are joking about, you know, our people or members of the marginalized communities. And they will behave as if maybe their families in their, you know, respective countries or constituents, they don't have such type of people. And they look at it as if those people, maybe they don't deserve to live a better life the way they are living. So if we bring back humanity among, you know, in the people, we need to instill this ethics of being responsible.
Just a commercial break quickly, so sorry.
With real value at WB. Get a 2-liter Pepsi now for a sweet $14.99. 750ml WB cooking oil for only $26.99. 1 kg Sunlight hand wash powder for just $36.99. And 50 High Baby active diapers at only $124.99. See all our real value deals at www.vurmanbrock.com. We care.
Sorry, Mr. Shoemaker, Dr. Shoemaker, continue. You're talking about people being responsible.
Yes, we need to be very responsible for whatever that we are saying online. Responsibility comes with a lot of things. First, if you are crafting the message, know that that message is coming from you. That point is coming from you. And when it goes there, it is now targeting a specific audience. And that audience, by the time, if that is a negative message, that individual will be affected. It may lead to people, you know, losing their jobs. Either you, as a person who shared that specific post, you will find yourself in court, or, you know, the other person might even lose their job because they'll be highly stressed. Because we have some people who have suffered so much mental effects you know, of all these, you know, the trauma that they got because of this exposure and the discussions that are taking place online.
Mm.
So it is something that we need to take collectively as a society, that by supporting our government, our institutions of higher learning, they are busy doing that. I know University of Namibia is doing this, Namibia University of Science and Technology is doing it. Other institutions are also doing it. Let us tackle it, you know, together. My office is available also to help out other institutions, any institution that needs, you know, to be given a crash course or seminar on social media ethics. My office is available, it's open anytime, and we can, you know, educate the society. Through education, you know, we'll be able to achieve a lot.
Of course. Doctor, thank you so much for those insights and making the public to know that your office is very much open. Now, your last message to the people, to every one of us, on the ethical use of social media.
Yes, all of us, let us now act responsibly. Let us exercise digital maturity. Let us have self-respect. Let us now take note that social media is here to unite us. Social media is here to make life easier for us and to create digital publics. Overall, social media is an extension of e-democracy initiatives. That's where we will be able to participate, and from participation it will lead to engagement, and the people will be able to take part in, you know, molding and building this specific society in a responsible manner without causing any disharmony. That's the clear message that I have. Everybody who is online, behave, you know, accordingly, and take note that you are accountable for everything or any action that you are taking online. We are not talking about coercing and censoring, you know, media. We are just saying responsible conduct, responsible discussions should take place without us infringing and touching on other people's, you know, human rights and privacy or dignity.
Absolutely. Dr. Sadarak Panduleni Shiomeka, thank you so much for making time for us right here on the Radar News Analysis and sharing that wonderful information with us.
Thank you so much, and feel free to come to approach my office anytime.
Of course.
The public should also come to my office anytime they can see that their rights are violated online.
Mm-hmm. If you can hand over some books to me to make it more easier for my work, that I will definitely show up.
Thank you.
Okay.
Okay.
And there you had it from the media ombudsman. Now, of course, when we're talking about ethical use of social media, this refers to engaging online in ways that are respectful, truthful, and considerate of the impact on one's words and actions have on others. It also includes verifying information before sharing, avoiding harmful or discriminatory content, respecting privacy, and fostering constructive dialogue rather than spreading hate or falsehood. Now, one thing I did forget to mention, when Prof, Naub was talking, delivering Professor Errol Naumab was delivering his speech. He was speaking about how the measures that NAST has also put in place. When I was a student at the Namibia University of Science and Technology, our lecturer had us put in our assignments on Tenetin. And now this was 20. We're talking about 2017 here, yeah? And for some, Tenetin has only now, they've only started now. Now, this is when we had to submit our assignments on Tenetin, it will make sure that it points and highlights where you sourced this from. If you copied exactly as it is, or minimal transformation, for instance, if you copy something and you didn't make it into, turn it into your own words, it will pick up exactly the source. And that was quite very interesting. You know, it forced some of us, and I was also force me to make sure that I write, because you'll be penalized. You'll be penalized certain percentages depending on how much percentage Tenetin says you copied or you plagiarized without even sourcing very well where you got it and stuff like that. So some of the things are putting such measures in place is quite very good, as it helps students to stay original to their own words and not just copy and paste that which is not their work. At the end of the day, you don't understand exactly what it is that you did. You know, the other day we had a conversation with my sister and she was telling me about ChatGPT, and she can just put something in there and gives it back to her, and it saves her a lot of work for assignment. Now the danger of that, hey, is that you sometimes don't have any role or any part in what is being produced, and you yourself, you lack to gain the basis that you're supposed to learn in that particular assignment. And then let me tell you something, there comes a time when in actual life, maybe years after, whereby this, the training that you got will not be required for you to perform a particular job. Like for instance, today I just remembered on how actually Tenetin helped me, because right now I can thoroughly write a script by myself, because of that, training that I got back in school. So in other words, I'm just trying to caution you that don't skip the learning basis that you ought to be learning, because you now have ChatGPT and you have DeepSeek and you have other areas that you can just reflect on or head to. Now with that being said, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. This is On the Radar Analysis.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Great news! Impact just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. You are tuned into On the Radar Analysis right here on Eagle FM. I'll be keeping you company up until 14:30. Remember, our studio line is also very much open. You can also come through and air opinions and contributions, or perhaps ask questions, share with us in terms of ethical use of social media. What are your thoughts in that regard? Also, you can head over to our Facebook page and you can comment right under our poster, and we'll read your comments right here. Now, of course, let's move on with News Beyond the Borders. But before we get to News Beyond the Borders, we tell you what's making headlines in terms of economic indicators and trading economics. Let's get right into it. Okay, now we're starting off with the Namibian dollar compared to other currencies. Now, of course, one US dollar today will get you 17 Namibian dollars and 57 cents. One Australian dollar will get you 11 Namibian dollars and 46 cents. While one euro will get you 20 Namibian dollars and 54 cents. £1 sterling will get you 23 Namibian dollars and 84 cents. And one Chinese yuan will get you 2 Namibian dollars and 45 cents. One Botswana pula, on the other hand, will get you 1 Namibian dollar and 31 cents. One Kenyan shilling will get you 0.14 Namibian dollars. And now heading over to trading economics. Industrial production in Senegal rose by 17.2% year-on-year in June 2025, maintaining double-digit growth for the sixth month running. Now, the strong performance was largely driven by 71.4% surge in extractive industries, mainly due to the inclusion of the start of oil extraction in Senegal and to a lesser extent by growth in electricity, gas, and water production, as well as environmental industries. However, manufacturing industry saw a decline of 6.5% during the period under review. And yeah, let's pause right here and I'll be back shortly.
Great news! Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Welcome back. Belgium's trade surplus narrowed sharply to 716.6 million euros in June 2025. That is from 1,138 million euros in the same month of the previous year. Now, exports edged up 0.9% year on year to 41,077.2 million euros, dragged down by lower shipments to EU countries at minus 1.1%, but rising to non-EU destinations by 5.3%. Now, in contrast, imports rose 2.0% to 40,360.6 million euros, driven by higher purchases from non-European countries at 10.0%, while imports declined from EU declined by minus 2.6%. Labor activities in the United Kingdom, measured as output per hour worked, fell by 0.6% in the second quarter of 2025, following a 0.3% increase in the previous period, that is according to preliminary estimates. Now, on an annual basis, productivity declined by 0.8% following 0.2% decrease in the first quarter, as hours worked increased more than GVA 2% and 1.1% respectively. Output per hour worked was 1.5% higher compared with pre-coronavirus pandemic levels of 2019 average, while output per worker was 1.1% higher compared with the same period. Poland's annual inflation rate was confirmed at 3.1% in July 2025, matching the preliminary estimate and easing from 4.1% in the previous month. And that's all we had for you today in terms of economic indicators and trading economics. Let's pause right here, take a short trip to the marketplace, and we'll be back to take you to news beyond the borders. Don't go anywhere. Stay tuned right here on the Radar Analysis.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts or previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not pick up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back, and I will take you to news beyond the borders. We're starting off regionally, moving over to continental news, thereafter bringing you international news. Now we're crossing over to South Africa. We're talking about the business leadership. South Africa is launching a reform tracker.
Here's other news worth your attention. Business Leadership South Africa is launching a reform tracker to monitor the progress of critical policy reforms impacting South African businesses and the economy. This data-driven tool is aimed at providing a transparent and accountable assessment of these reforms, serving as a resource for stakeholders that are invested in the country's economic future.
The Business Leadership South Africa Reform Tracker tool going live this morning as we see various of role players, including those in government, coming through into Sandton, Johannesburg to form part of this occasion. This described as a very important moment in terms of taking stock of where South Africa finds itself to date, looking at the relationship between business and governance, and also how then we see these reforms championing economic growth. As we speak right now, the country is navigating a point two of Operation Vulindlela, and this becoming a vehicle that speaks of these reforms. And this vehicle coming through as we see this tool takes stock of some of these developments around governance, around economic justice, but also just taking stock about around where we find ourselves with our trade relations in the country. I'm going to bring into the conversation with us this afternoon, the Deputy Minister of Finance, Deputy Minister Asher Serupen, who'll just give us a sense of the role of, National Treasury where this process is concerned. We know very well that this comes as Operation Vulindlela. It's in full swing, but we see the private sector saying it's very important that we put together a tool that will track where we are, where these reforms are concerned. Welcome to the SABC.
Thank you very much for having me. I think it's good to be here today. And I think we welcome this BLSA tool very much. It is another part of the pressure we need in the system to help us get the right kind of economic reforms done so that we can grow this economy, create jobs, and get more people out of poverty and into meaningful employment. And I think that shows that we're all on this journey together as business and government to try to get these goals achieved. And so this is a very, very important day for us.
There have been those overarching criticisms that, we do have plans as a country. The Constitution is an amazing document, but on the ground, we don't see things move. And this economic change, this repositioning of the economic change in the country just becoming a reality for a lot of people on the ground. How do we see these relations just getting better over time? And does this tool come through as that monitoring device that can help push that relation?
So I think it is a fair criticism. Of course, the GNU has only been in office for a year now, a year and a month. And this tool shows that when you look at its reporting, that starting this year, the pace of reform has really gained momentum. And what that shows us, the GNU actually is beginning to push on with the right kinds of reforms. And the fact that we are getting positive feedback from the business community, and we see that business confidence is at a 4-month high today as well, tells us that things are beginning to move in the right direction, even if we have some global headwinds. So we're seeing some good green shoots now. on the reform program. But of course, there is a lot more to do, particularly in freight rail, particularly in ports and so on, as was pointed out this morning here with BLSA. And of course, we will keep pushing on to get those reforms done. So the plans haven't gathered dust. We haven't made announcements that we haven't followed through. We have started to push on, particularly in home affairs and skills. We've gone to RFIs in port and freight rail, RFIs on the transmission infrastructure for the country as well. That shows that we are moving onto these reforms, partnering with business and bringing business in so that we can sort out our infrastructure and get our economy moving.
This coming through as well at a time where we are counting down to the national convention, to the national dialogue as well. And a lot of people just looking at how this process would help inform where we are going as a nation. As the National Treasury, what is your thinking around this process of dialoguing, but also the convention that is coming this weekend?
Well, obviously the convention is run by the presidency and it is in the interest of nation building and longer term thinking. Our focus is on seeing through a lot of the reforms and deepening the reforms that we have already so that we can show citizens in any platform, whether it's a dialogue or it is a business meeting or so on, what it is that we are actually doing and what is the action steps we're taking to create jobs and to get the economy moving, to unlock growth, to help businesses become more competitive in the global economy and in the domestic economy. And that is really our core focus. And hopefully, and whether it is the dialogue, whether it is in any other kind of platform, we can show, and with the things like this track and so on, the kind of results that we're achieving. And the further we push on some of the deeper reforms, the more likely we are to get the growth moving. And that would be the kind of report back that we can give to citizens in any platform.
Deputy Minister, thank you very much for joining us. Deputy Minister Cyril Penn, just coming through from the National Treasury, looking at the role of this national tracker by the BLSA. And this is an open platform in terms of how, as South Africans, you can also go there to hold government accountable on some of the deliverables, but also the plans that will be contained in the national policy documents that speak to economic growth.
South Africa Tourism launches Tourism Month campaign.
All right, let's cross back to Griselda Lewis, who's at the launch of the Tourism Month in Johannesburg. Good afternoon yet again, Griselda. I see now that there's a number of goods in front of you. Just share with us exactly what we're seeing now on our screens.
Well, Mfundo, these are proudly South African goods. And, I mean, what better way to demonstrate or to showcase what you have at the start of a Tourism Month, of course. And in front of us here, we've got accessories from Rain Design Studios. And you'd see they're still... Actually, I'm not going to be the one to say what we have here. I'm going to bring in Lerato Semenya, who is with Rain Design Studios. Lerato, what is it that you're showcasing here today? I see the sales are also coming in.
Sales are streaming in, and it's wonderful. So we have a home scent range. So everything from diffusers to mists to scented candles. And because we're talking about the home, why not luxuriate in a beautiful bath with bath salts, body butters, and sugar scrub. So yeah, all handmade in Johannesburg by our team of women. So yeah, we're very proud to be here to showcase the product that we have. And yeah, thank you.
And I mean, moments like this, you know, at the start of Tourism Month, people, you know, travelers who are coming to South Africa are always looking for something authentic, something South African to take home with them, something to, for them to remember, you know, where they were. Talk us through, again, I guess, these are hand lotions.
So hand lotion and hand soap.
Yeah.
So these ones, we love to call them back office because we think you should put these in your own bathroom. And on the other side, we have a black and white bottle of the same product.
Okay.
And that's the one that we think you're best suited for. And it's ready to go. Just from a travel perspective, this is ready to go, easy to travel with. So we package it nicely for you if you're thinking about our guests. And then we have the scrubs, the body butters, and then the diffusers and the mists. So everything we thought about, kind of the aesthetic component, obviously, but also just value to you. Why would you want to luxuriate in a bath and not come out feeling like a brand new spanking baby? So we've thought about all of that, the ingredients very carefully chosen, and everything sourced locally, and we hand make in our warehouse in Kaya Sands.
Botswana's President Duma Boko commits to completing them project.
This looks like a road to nowhere, and only 4x4 vehicles can make it here, except for those with access to real raw horsepower. Or alternatively, this 3-hour road trip can also be reduced to 45 minutes from the capital, Maseru. Botswana President Duma has come to learn of a lowlands transfer water scheme with an aim to construct a 700-kilometer pipeline that will annually deliver 150 million cubic meters to Botswana and 158 million cubic liters to South African towns along the pipeline.
If you look over there, you're going to see there's a bit of scraping of the land. It's almost like a road. That is where we scrape the road to drill, to do geotechnical studies. We have a similar one just down here so that you can't see it. This is where the studies have been done for the construction of the dam. It's going to be what's called a double curvature arc dam, similar to the one we have at Gatse. It's called double curvature because it curves both horizontally and vertically. It's going to be about 150 meters long, and it's going to connect this area. I mentioned that because, Honorable President, in order to get to that area, you need to travel about 6 hours going around to get to here. But with the construction of the dam wall and access, it's going to take, you know.
By nature of it, it's a very attractive project in terms of financial institutions like African Development Bank. You know, they have committed to the project to say, even though the project is $3 billion US dollars, if countries, the three countries can raise 10% of that, they will be able to raise the 90% through loans and grants. So at least you've got the development partners, we have got an appetite to see this project to its logical conclusion.
Duma says the enormity of this project will bring benefits to all the countries involved and should be treated with the seriousness it merits.
Botswana stands to benefit 158 million cubic meters of water per year delivered in the southern part of the country, serving therefore a huge catchment area. South Africa will get 68 million liters, cubic meters of water from this project. And along the pipeline, 5 megawatts of power will be generated. Nothing could be more important to South Africa than just that benefit. We, as Botswana, are committed fully to the realization of this project. Lesotho is, as evidenced by our being here today and their presence fully behind this project. I have not the slightest doubt in my mind that South Africa is also on board, and it will ensure that this project is realized as speedily as possible.
By its own admission, Botswana's water demand have long outstripped local bulk water resources, and despite concerted several efforts to alleviate shortage challenges, indications are that the water sources will not be adequate as early as 2025. I'm Lapelang Khatebe for SABC News, Makgaleng River, Maseru-Lesotho.
Centers for Disease Control equips Uganda prisons with laboratory.
One and zero.
Uganda Prisons Services has received a shot in the arm. Renovation and equipment for this reference laboratory that serves staff, inmates, countrywide, and the community around Luzira. The director of CDC in Uganda, Dr. Mary Boyd, explained that theirs is to support self-reliance.
Over 12 motorbikes to facilitate picking up of samples from prison sites ensures that there is timely access to viral load testing, that there's timely access to early infant diagnosis, TB testing, disease outbreak testing through the National Sample Testing and Referral Network.
Under the initiative, vital lab equipment, including 8 gene expert machines to improve TB diagnosis in prisons, have also been provided. The prevalence of active TB in prisons is nearly 8 times higher than in the general population, and the HIV prevalence among prisoners stands at 11% compared to 5.5% in the general population.
We do 3,000 samples for tuberculosis in a month. We offer services to upper prison, Kampala Remand, Maxwell Bay, Luzida Women, and the staff hospital. And then in terms of HIV care, we do 250 viral samples in a month. That is point of care. We're also able to do CD4. We do CRRP testing. We also do viral load for hepatitis B.
Every year, they serve nearly 50,000 patients in their outpatient department. Now, what they would prefer is for the Minister of Health to help them elevate them from the health center four level to a hospital level, which would enable them, among many other things, be able to afford to increase its staffing levels from the current 84 to more than 360 that they would prefer to have.
When we go and see this aggregated data, you see actually the staff attendance is about 40% of the total attendance. That means we are offering more services to the outsiders than the general community than the staff's needs.
All over the country, we're expanding the infrastructure definitely for the future. The insurance, you never know. We got support and we increased the number of health workers on the human resource, about 200, sometime back. And also deliberately, we as a service, catch up with the service delivery all over the country. We went in full blast, I think that was 2018, with James when I was with him as the supervisor, to recruit custodial health workers. Any recruitment of the custodial workers, whereas me and him, we went and we talked to the top management, said, can we have some people who have got this qualification so that they help us? And indeed, I think we have about 400. We have about 400 custodial health workers. And that's why we're able to reach everyone this time.
Walter Mwesije, NTV.
Rescue efforts are underway after a gold mine collapse in Tanzania's Shinyanga region.
We begin in Tanzania, where officials say 22 people are missing following a gold mine collapse in the northwestern region of Shinyanga. The incident occurred as technicians were doing maintenance work on mining shafts at the Wachapakazi gold mine on Monday. According to Shinyanga authorities, 3 technicians were rescued 32 hours after the collapse. Tanzanian Defense and Security Forces are continuing efforts to rescue the remaining technicians. Isaac Lukando is live for us in Dar es Salaam for more on this. Isaac, what's the latest on the rescue efforts and the missing persons?
Well, what we know is that the rescue effort is still ongoing. This is according to authorities in Shinyanga region. We heard yesterday from the district commissioner who was informing us on the number of people that were missing. He mentioned a figure, 25 as opposed to 22. He mentioned that there were 3 shafts, mining shafts, that were being overseen for maintenance by this Wachapakazi group, which is a group of young people that do mining in the area. These 3 mining shafts were undergoing maintenance, and they had 6 people in one, 11 in another, and 8 in another, making up 25. And with communications established in one of those shafts that had 6 people, led to the rescue of 3 people. But they said that with the other 2 shafts, they hadn't established communication. But what they also told us is that they would continue with the process of rescuing or trying to find communication with those people who are trapped inside, and they would inform us of any development in that area. So what we do know up till now is that they are pitched in the area. Rescue efforts are continuing, and we are waiting to receive a formal statement from authorities in the region.
We do know that regional mining authorities are said to have previously suspended the mine's operations following safety inspections, but here we are now. So what is likely to happen next?
Oh, well, what is likely to happen next is what has happened with previous incidents of this nature. Just in May, there was another incident that involved the death of 6 people. 11 people were saved from another mine within the same region. We do know that usually when an incident of such nature happens, there is an investigation that happens to look into what exactly happened. But we do know from authorities in this case that mining operations were suspended, and what was happening in these mining shafts was maintenance work to firm up the shafts so that upon further inspection, mining operations could resume. So what we do know, as has happened in the past, is that an investigation will be conducted, and we will be informed of whether mining operations are safe to continue or not.
Chigando City transforms urban spaces into vibrant sports hubs.
And sheltered, ventilated, spacious and bright. Welcome to Chengdu, a city that is full of surprises, especially its urban landscape. This new space has been created by utilizing an unused area of an overpass. The creation helps address issues like the lack of greenery and haphazard parking in idle spaces. Residents really appreciate the freedom from the confinement and stuffiness of indoor spaces.
Thanks to sports parks like this, regardless of whether it is raining, cloudy or sunny, we can engage in sports activities without any hindrance from the weather, as this place provides both shade and shelter.
First, it's close to my home, and second, there is an overpass above, protecting us from sun and rain. Even on a rainy day like today, we can still play basketball here.
Driven by Chengdu's recent successes of international events, from the Universiade to the World Games, the city's sports and exercise venues have grown increasingly diverse, while supporting facilities continue to be upgraded to meet the ever-rising demands of sports enthusiasts.
Once a run-down patch beneath the bridge, the area used to draw loiterers and pose safety risks. In the 3 years since we took over, it has become a vibrant public space, generating roughly 400,000 yuan in annual revenue. We have woven together a rich mix of experiences. Young people shooting hoops on the basketball courts, their grandparents sipping tea nearby, while music classes, bird and flower markets, and other offerings fill the grounds with life.
There is a community operating here, so you can enjoy some services like food and beverages that we cannot enjoy in other ordinary outdoor courts.
Chengdu's sports infrastructure is rapidly improving. At the end of 2024, Chengdu has transformed 848 idle spaces into community sports corners, many of them located under bridges, along streets, riverbanks, rooftops, and more, bringing sports facilities right to the doorsteps of the city's people, providing a more welcoming and diverse sports experience for everyone.
Russians hope for peace from Putin-Trump summit.
Russian President Vladimir Putin and his U.S. counterpart Donald Trump are set to meet in Alaska on Friday, marking the first summit since the start of the conflict in Ukraine. Whether the talks can produce a peace deal remains uncertain, but many Moscow residents are hopeful. Everyone has their own interests, but I hope they will most likely have to agree on something. I think that they're not flying there for nothing. I hope that after all, this must end someday. So I hope that some kind of compromise can certainly be found. The Kremlin has sought to portray renewed contacts with Washington as two superpowers looking to resolve various global problems, with Ukraine being just one. We believe that this meeting should allow the leaders to concentrate on discussing all the accumulated issues, starting with the Ukrainian crisis and ending with the obstacles to the establishment of a normal, functional bilateral dialogue, which, naturally, is of utmost importance from the point of view of ensuring international peace and stability. European leaders have protested the absence of Ukraine at the summit that could decide how Kiev's war with Moscow ends. Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky was due to meet with UK Prime Minister Keir Starmer on Thursday.
Trump wants to extend federal control over Washington police.
U.S. President Donald Trump said on Wednesday he would ask the Republican-controlled Congress to extend federal control of Washington City Police Force beyond 30 days.
We expect to be to Congress before Congress very quickly. And again, we think the Democrats will not do anything to stop crime, but we think the Republicans will do it almost unanimously. So we're going to need a crime bill that we're going to be putting in, and it's going to pertain initially to D.C. It's almost, we're going to use it as a very positive example, and we're going to be asking for extensions on that, long-term extensions, because you can't have 30 days.
That marks an escalation of Trump's campaign to exert presidential power over the nation's capital, after he said on Monday he was deploying 800 National Guard troops to Washington and invoked the District of Columbia Home Rule Act to place city police under direct federal control for 30 days. A White House official said more than 1,450 law enforcement personnel were on patrol in Washington on Tuesday night, including hundreds of federal officers and agents from more than a dozen agencies. This video shows Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents arresting a man in the Capitol on Wednesday, as well as an ICE helicopter flying over the National Mall. Trump has painted a picture of D.C. as a city gripped by a wave of crime and pervasive homelessness, despite both federal and city statistics showing that violent crime there is on the decline. Without providing evidence, Trump claimed those numbers weren't true on Wednesday.
You're going to see a big change in Washington crime stats very soon. Well, they're not the stats that they gave, because they turned out to be a total fraud. The real stats, the stats went through the roof. You know, they had a man that was forced to put up stats like they were doing better. They're not doing better. The crime is the worst it's ever been, but it started as of about yesterday. You see a big change.
U.S. Attorney General Pam Bondi told Fox Noticias that officials were looking into whether the city's statistics last year were manipulated. The office of the city's mayor, Muriel Bowser, declined to respond to Trump's latest comments, but she has previously noted that violent crime in the city hit a 30-year low last year. Any legislation to extend Trump's control over the police department would likely stall in the Senate, where Democrats can use procedural rules to block most bills. Trump told reporters on Wednesday that if Congress fails to act, he can declare a national emergency to extend the 30-day limit.
With that being said, we have officially come to the conclusion after this episode of On the Radar News Analysis. Now do stay tuned for the Voters Education Program with Bishop Lucas Katende. From Indafa, happy Juju, it is goodbye. Have yourself a wonderful day as we anticipate Friday tomorrow. Be on the outlook for The Villager newspaper tomorrow.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts or previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than The Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Great news. Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.